at that time, really couldn't hope to be any higher than a full colonel, but lots of engineers went on beyond that in staff jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And they got certainly, it wouldn't be out of reason to expect to end up being a brigadier at least.
Well, being a lieutenant colonel or a colonel, that would have put you in a position to have been, say, a military attaché and do a little
travel.
Yeah,
oh yeah, I did that.
I know Colonel Carson did, for example. He was in Washington for a while.
Yeah.
Did that not appeal to you at all? Is
no.
It? How come? Had you seen enough of the world by that time to...
Well, I think it really gets back. I wanted to be an engineer.
Yeah.
I wanted to do engineering.
You were training.
I wasn't the idea of cocktail parties and... of social life, just it wasn't my number one aim, and that's what military attachés do, right?
Basically.
Bring a lot of cocktail parties and be good at socializing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want that, no. A little of it I enjoyed,
but
a lot of
steady
it
dose.
I didn't like at all.
Yeah.
And even before you see the war, I was saying that, you know, I might aspire to be an area commander, but again, I just want a hell of a lot of socializing. Really didn't appeal to me much.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you do that year at Ottawa? What were you? What was your function?
I was assistant quartermaster general, they call them, and in charge of works for Ontario and Central Canada. I guess was my territory.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot just how far it extended, but it was just straight routine works, and I think I may have said that. One of my most youthful purposes was to go down every morning to the deputy minister's office before he got there and rearrange the files so that the ones I was interested in would get attention earlier than I otherwise. But he had a big table in front of my gut and had a Monday pound, Tuesday pound, Wednesday pound, Thursday, and Friday. And he'd start Monday and go down so far and and wouldn't, the next morning he started in the Tuesday pile. And so I was down there in the Monday pile trying to stick mine in the Tuesday pile. That was really the most useful thing I could do.
Mm-hmm. So certainly there wasn't great attraction for you to stay in, you know, this kind of job.
No. No. I thought it was a lot of pen pushing and writing up. Trying to get money to do things, it was very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Very frustrating.
So when did you get out? What year?
Got out in 47.
Mm-hmm.
And late summer, I guess, of 47, I went straight to Port Renfrew as a logging engineer.
Working for a large company, or?
Yeah, BC Forge Products.
This is where you almost caught pneumonia, I think, didn't you?
Pardon?
Didn't you say you almost caught pneumonia, that you
That's
felt
right.
You were a bit too old to be doing this?
I finally did catch a dose of pneumonia and decided I'd try something else. quite interesting, but it was a bit much for me.
Well, you were still quite a young man. I mean, you weren't old by any means.
Well, geez, when I was 1947, is 40... I was 47 from 84. God, I gotta do some arithmetic. Anyway.
47
from 84
is 37?
37 years, and I'm now 71. So 37 from 71.
26 and 19.
God, I'm honestly not
capable
of engineering today.
Well, it's 37 minus, 71 minus 37, it'd be 35, or 34.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it was in 1947, eh? Yeah. I was born in a little bit of the easy way, eh? 34, yeah.
That's not old.
Well, but as a logging engineer, it's a very vigorous life. In those days, we started off about 4 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and we were usually permanently wet all day, and swinging an axe, and nothing much high-level engineering, I can tell you, and laying out the railway and roads. And
so you were pitching in during the work as well as the workers?
Oh yeah, as a logging engineer, you do a lot of axe swinging,
mm-hmm.
and a hell of a mountain climbing up and down through cross streams, and you're pretty well short of being permanently wet.
Yeah.
And then you come back at night and plot your notes and so on, and you didn't get much sleep.
And you don't have luxurious accommodations, I wouldn't think.
I slept in a hut with 19 other loggers snoring and snarling at one another. it was quite a change, I tell you, quite a change. But if I probably hadn't got pneumonia, I might have lasted a little bit longer, but they also promised me a house for my wife, and that didn't come, so after 6 months, I started again.
Mm-hmm. So where'd you go from there?
W.D. Gray had a building supply business, and my naivety became his representative on Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm.
And strictly commission, bucking people like, in those days, Sidney Ruthven and John Bennett, and all. Sidney Ruthven was a comparatively local thing, but all the well-established building supply people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's pretty hard market to break into.
Pretty hard market to break, and I finally decided that wasn't going to pay. So one of my customers was Stuart and Hudson, who were now Revelstoke Building Supply.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them quite a bit, and they knew I wasn't too happy, so. And they had a lot of land to develop up and down the island, and so you'd be our engineer. So that was fine. I enjoyed that very much. But in the meantime, the Association of Professional Engineers were looking for a new registrar manager. And so they offered me double the salary I was getting at Stuart & Hudson. And Stuart & Hudson said, "Oh, we can't quite meet that. Sorry to see you go, but I'll be with you." And who knows how to stay with them? It might work out all right. I don't know. But twice the money was very important in those days.
And when you've got a family.
Yeah, that's right.
You've got to think of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
So off I went to Vancouver and did that job for a few years. And then the past president, I went there, the vice president was Tom Ingledow, who was the chief engineer of the BC Electric.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became president, and then became past president. When he became past president, phoned me up one day and encouraged me to join the BC Electric, which I did. Another increase, sorry. And that lasted quite happily for quite a few years. And then I joined Sandwell and Company, consulting engineers. So I'm quite happy for 12 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then business went flat. It was absolutely flat. So I went back to BC Hydro. And I went up on the Kootenay Canal project. And then when that job finished, I went to Crippen and Company, who were consulting engineers in the hydroelectric field. Stayed with them a couple of years. I decided, getting towards the end of the line, I wanted to live here, and so Willis kind of Tate offered me a job with them, and I stayed with them for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Are you doing anything now?
No.
Except golfing in the sunshine.
Golfing and gardening.
Do you regret having left the service when you did?
No. No, I was... I guess financially, I might have been better off if I'd stayed. You know, I didn't get a pension or anything. 13-year service, not counting RNC. And
you don't get any pension at all from them?
No.
What is the minimum you have to serve?
I would have had to stay until I was age 55.
To get anything at all?
Yeah. Except my own money. And I just couldn't personalize that. I just couldn't.
Well, it sounds as if you had a varied life as an engineer. I mean.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I finally did get around to doing some engineering,
mm-hmm.
and then it wasn't long before I was back in administration again, I must admit, but at least had some years of being an engineer. I spent most of my life in the consulting engineering business.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, that's where most engineers are going to end up, aren't they?
Hopefully, yeah. Well, you get in a big company like Hydro, you might hope to get good experience in engineering and be very satisfied. But, or Cominco or something like that. But the chances of getting into real engineering certainly, I think, better with a consulting firm than they are most other places.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the business end of consulting engineering. Challenging. Everybody always seemed to think that I should be good at selling.
Why is that? Why do they think you've got the right personality for it?
I guess so. I never thought of myself particularly good salesman, but I was always encouraged to go in that direction.
Well, you seem to like people, I think.
I like people, yeah, and I get along well with people. And I like to think. I like to think that my best sport is administration. Organization, I like to think I'm a tidy-minded person,
mm-hmm.
but and I think I proved it.
Do you thank the Army for that, or do you?
I think no doubt about the Army. Army helped me with that, but maybe more dealing with people than pure administration. But I think just your training as an engineer should create a tidy mind, but. A lot of really good engineers in a technical sense they get so carried away with a technical problem they lose sight of the dollars and cents and so on. I've always been money-minded.
So when you have financial affairs thrust upon you, you're forced to, aren't you?
Yeah. Plus, my early environment, my father was certainly an entrepreneur, and I certainly exposed to entrepreneurial activity at an early age.
Well, sir, thank
and
you.
I don't respond very well to bully boy tactics.
Such as Worthington.
Worthington and Walsh, yeah. Or maybe the Army generally.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tendency for. There's more opportunity, should we say. In the Army for people to be bully boys than there are in most other organizations.
Well, there's that attraction. I mean, you can order people to do things
That's right.
you want them to do.
People ask me to do things, and I usually respond favorably. When they start shoving me around, I bristle and resist.
That's a normal human reaction.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe I'm more so than most. Despite, I've always been that way. I never had any, very little problem in civilian life with bully boys, just once.
And of course, when you have to deal with that in civilian life, you deal with it in a different manner.
You just get out, you go. You don't put up with it.
Yeah. Can I ask you, how many children did you have? How many children?
Three.
What careers have they?
My eldest daughter is a graduate. Nurse, and she's now in the process of getting her master's degree. Mm-hmm. Still nursing. She's got two children of her own, doing it on her own now. And my number two daughter was until fairly recently a pharmaceutical company representative. And my son is the youngest one of the lot, age 26 now, I guess.
Fathers are never any good with age. My father can't tell how old I am.
Anyway, I think about that. But he's the Western Canada regional manager for Steelcase County. He's a born salesman,
mm-hmm.
and doing very well. He got a Bachelor of Commerce before he went off to Procter & Gamble for a while, and then into this company. Done very, very well.
Did you ever think of steering him towards the military, or?
I never. I left him entirely to follow his own nose. He did spend a couple of summers with me up in the Kootenai Canal, and as a sort of a specter. He did damn well. He was very useful. But he just loved marketing. I guess you know that. Marketing. Organizing others to sell.
Well, you really have to understand human nature to sell.
Yeah, he's always had a flair. Even as a little boy, he was very successful as a salesperson. Mm-hmm. I remember one time he was having a big golf tournament at Point Grey, and they wanted money for the program. And so they made some kind of arrangement with one of these guys that the battery of people in the room with telephone for advertising space. They never saw the light of day. He was very young at that time, only 15, and was in there for 2 weeks doing nothing but phoning cold turkey people to buy advertising space. And he loved it.
Was he on a commission?
And very successful, yeah. Very successful. I was about the age 15.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. I wouldn't want to do it. Part of it.
Yeah.
But we were in Procter & Gamble. He'd come out and he'd visit us when we were in Victoria there. And a little corner Chinese store he'd go down. And, you know, no interest really whatsoever in what that porter at the time had in the store. But he just couldn't help it. He'd look over the shelves and he'd give the porter Lieutenant hell for not doing that. Just couldn't resist it.
Yeah. He becomes so ingrained.
Oh, yeah. He likes wheeling and dealing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well.
No matter what the economy does, that kind of person will always do well.
Yeah, yeah, never need to worry.
Yeah.
Well, he's, I think he's around 26, and he's earning about $60,000 a year already, so he's doing that.
So I'm 24, and I'm a pauper, so.
But he wasn't a great student. He
was probably bored by school if he is as exuberant a person as he sounds to be.
He didn't really apply himself to school at all at university. He just had a good time. But he worked hard on the summer jobs. He worked very hard as an inspector.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because his father was there, he wanted like a poor show.
Yeah.
But as my mind, and I'm prejudiced, of course, but I thought he was the best inspector of the bunch as a university student.
Did you mind being interviewed, sir? Did you?
I enjoyed it. It's been very pleasant reminiscing. I'm sorry I've been so woolly on some of my recollections, but it's a long time ago.
Yes.
I didn't keep much in the way of diaries.
Did you write a diary at all?
Not much. Very much. I kept for some time all my operation orders and appreciations and so on, but I think I finally gave them to Chilliwack Museum. I think. I'm not even sure of that. I may have burned the whole schmear.
Mm-hmm. But I would think that the official war diary of...
They're all there, yeah. They're all... So there's no point in keeping them.
Yeah.
The museum is a little separate.
Are they doing much with them at the museum?
I don't know. Bunt Carson's the expert on that. He's been close to it for many years.
I talked to him a little bit about it last time. But
yeah. Well, he's quite keen on the museum. He did a lot of work on it. And I'm not sure. He's still not the chairman of the committee. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm an honorary member, but I've done nothing. Nothing.
Have you been to it often?
I've been in it once.
Once? What is it like?
Not bad.
Yeah. On a par with, say, British regimental museums? And
no.
A bit smaller and...
Mind you, I haven't. I've been to the one in Ottawa. That's the only one I think I've ever been.
You mean the official military museum?
Yeah.
I haven't been there. It's quite extensive.
Oh yeah, that's the only one I've ever been in, other than Chilliwack.
Well, any town you go to in Britain, they all seem to have a regimental museum. Every town seems to have one.
Yeah, I've never.
Maybe a rather small scale, a couple of rooms, lots of uniforms, and the odd sword.
Mm-hmm.
And pictures, maybe.
Oh, well, this one in Chilliwack, I don't think it's bad. It's been very much a voluntary basis. There's hardly any time when anyone was paid to do anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was spare time activity for somebody paid once in a while at the beginning, but I mean, most of it's been strictly voluntary. So it's not very extensive. Well, you may be interested. You'd come to see it one day.
Well, you know, everything has to start from some point.
Beg your pardon?
Everything has to start from
some
point, right?
Yeah. And certainly, Monk Carson has worked hard at it for many years.
So we've mentioned that through the museum, they're trying to get a third volume of the history prepared.
Yeah.
And I think he wants to get someone like Roy or someone of some stature to write.
Yeah, this. No, what impression do you... Maybe I'm talking out of turn, but I have the impression that Monk Carson is pretty lukewarm for the latter half of his career, at least, but maybe he doesn't convey that impression to you. He probably conveys a very loyal and dedicated impression, does he?
Well, to be honest, we just got to the end of the Second War last time. Last time I spoke to him. Next week we're going to deal with his life after the war.
Yes, I know. I shouldn't...
Well, you mentioned before that you think that his wife perhaps had something to do with his getting out and perhaps wanting to get out sooner.
Well, I thought so. I thought she would have been happy to see him get out, but you gave him the other impression, didn't you?
Well, she seemed to enjoy the life of the traveling.
Yes, socializing and so on, yeah. But, I sort of had the impression that she felt he didn't get his just desserts in the army. And that he might have done better in City Street. But,
I think any good wife should feel that way about her husband.
Yeah. I wouldn't be sure that he's disillusioned or not, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't a little disillusioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think solely by the fact that he's maintained close links with the museum.
Well, I mean, Colonel Commandant has been, he'd be very intensely loyal to the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
He always has been.
But not to the powers of be that have dictated to the Corps.
I'm sure that there's some powers of be that he dislikes just as intensely as I do, yeah. Or one in particular.
To Walsh?
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a few not nice things to say about Walsh.
That's right. Well, we neither one of us thought very highly of him.
Yeah. What happened to Walsh after the war?
Well, he became a Chief of General Staff.
Yeah. Well, that's right, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was certainly a factor in my thinking, too.
Yeah, because you guys...
He was going to be... in the upper echelon for the rest of my, or a large part of my career, I wasn't really anxious to go on fighting for the rest of the time.
So that I can infer from that that perhaps Mrs. Carson felt that because Colonel Carson wouldn't get far because he was in this high level authority. And
I think that's part of it, for sure.
Yeah.
She might have hoped that change his ways, right? You know, he'd be gone eventually, and then once he was gone, things would change.
The trouble is, though, that if you reach a rank and you're passed over at a certain
That's
point,
right.
you're not going to get up again,
That's
are you?
Right. I didn't stay that long. I never got passed over. But
Well, the thing that strikes me about Colonel Carson is that he seems to be well off and happy. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they ever had to worry financially. I don't, money was not a factor with them, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't really a factor with me. I didn't get out because of the money.
It was a challenge.
I wanted to be an engineer. And I didn't like the frustration of the post-war army at all.
Mm-hmm. I guess you saw the beginning of the political aspects of it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you were an Ottawa for years.
The beginning, yeah. That Worthington constantly chivving me to cut back. And it went on and on and on for quite a few years after I got out.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the feeling that with people like Worthington, that they felt that engineers weren't really soldiers? Because Worthington would be a really hard line.
I don't... I never really accuse him of that, no. Because I think it was generally considered that the School of Military Engineer was as smart a bunch of soldiers as there was in the Canadian Army at that particular time. I think he'd be the first to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
They were really looked upon with... they were good.
They respected him.
They were first class. They were good on parade. They were good. They were really a top-notch bunch.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's why I didn't want to see it any different.
Was it? Did the reputation plummet after the war?
Well, I really don't know how they stand today because it's Chilliwack's not just engineers, you know, it's a bigger base.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, I think they had a very good reputation of being smart soldiers,
mm-hmm.
as well as competent, technically. No, I don't think there's any unit in Canada that could appear on parade more smartly than our guys. Generally accepted. We had the cream of the crop.
Mm-hmm. The officers are better educated than any other arm of the forces, and they can combine that with military efficiency.
Yeah, and we'd all had a hell of a lot of experience by the time we got back to Chile. They're all greatly experienced. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, we had to pick of what was available. It was the school, maybe, it was the center of everything. For engineers. It was where we were supposed to develop the core of the future, and did. And all the young officers came there first, you see. And it was where the traditions of the core were to be kept alive and fed and watered and inspired.
Well, after the war, immediately after the war, did they reevaluate how education, what role it was going to play? Like, would RMC offer a full engineering degree after the war?
Yeah, I forgot what stage.
A few years after, at least.
I can't remember when it first happened.
Do you think that was a better system than having to go to, say, Queens? And
yes. Oh, yes.
Would you be taught military engineering as opposed to civilian engineering? Or any...
Well, you'd be taught military engineering as well as civilian engineering.
So it wouldn't be inclusive, or exclusive, I should say.
No, you see, we spent a lot longer periods in a year. You only spent 10 months there, instead of
eight.
But so you can put in a lot of extra subjects that you couldn't possibly do at the university. And military engineering would be one of them.
Yeah. The dominant one?
No. No. I don't know. Nowadays, for example, when I was at RMC, we did quite a bit of artillery. Mm-hmm. Whether they still, unless you choose to go into the artillery, whether you'd spend much time on artillery or not, but we did artillery all the way through, and cavalry, and certainly infantry, and we touched all arms.
Well, in those days, you had one curriculum that everybody followed, didn't you?
Everybody, yeah, took the same course.
Yeah.
Now you begin to specialize, I think, a little.
In your
maybe the last
2 years
or so, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, no, I think the present arrangement is much wiser. I would have liked that.
Well, sir, thank you. It's almost 5:30. And from looking at your wife, I think you're probably going out for dinner, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
But give me a buzz if there's anything that you want to check up on anything, on the phone, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I appreciate that very
anything
much.
It's not clear. Sure, some of it's going to be a little wobbly because of my faulty memory.
Well, a couple of things I might want to call you about would be, say, that time just after you left the armored brigade. You were a bit unclear of where you were at particular times. But that's something we can deal with after.
I am, in retrospect, quite sure I went, first of all, to headquarters Corps troops, engineers. And then, from there to the 3rd Field Company, 1st Div. And then, from there back to the Chief Engineer and Staff Duty of the Army. Well, Chief Engineer anyway. And then maybe 4th Battalion again at Basingstoke, and then back to Army.
Mm-hmm.
And then over to Africa. I moved around quite a lot.
Yeah, you did, especially that little period of time.
Yeah. I had a nice, I had a very satisfying year in Italy as the CRE. I really enjoyed that. It was very interesting.
Would that be, say, the highlight of your time in the forces?
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed that most. It was exciting. Something every day, something important was happening, and I felt a large measure of personal freedom to do what I wanted to do, how it should be. I wasn't even constantly chivied to death by somebody telling me what to do.
What's the joys of living a spontaneous life? I mean, you have to react to things that happen to you.
We all got along, we got along well together, we worked together as a team.
It's a common cause. I mean, you're doing something and there's a purpose to it.
But, we had a common cause during the days in the UK too, but if the people I was dealing with were in Italy were, I don't know, better with than I did with Mr. Walsh in England.
I think whoever writes the third volume of the history is going to have to say a few things about General Walsh.
Well, I'd be very surprised that you find more than about 5 engineers that have a good word to say for him, but...
They were his yes-men, the ones that sort of circled around?
Not yes-men, either. I guess some of them all in, and the majority just didn't like his bully boy tactics.
Mm-hmm.
They were, you know, they bristled.
Is Walsh still alive?
Yep. He's still alive.
I think he don't send Christmas cards.
No.
Where is he living?
He lives in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I probably just reacted badly. You know, I've been more let it slide off my back like a water off a duck's back and being smarter. But I just reacted badly.
Mm-hmm. It's still an honest reaction to something that wasn't done.
Yeah, but some people see would just slough it off. Off. You know. So what? And. Go on doing whatever they thought was right anyway, and let the chips fall where they may, but I resisted them. What?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the best way.
It's not the army way, is it?
No.
Yeah.
But as I say, you know, when I first met at headquarters, Corps Troops Engineers, he was a brigade major and I was a staff captain. We were both the same rank,
mm-hmm.
and always arguing. And why the hell you ever asked for me to come to commander, I can't imagine. Because it carried on exactly the same way, even though he was my boss then, as he cleared and distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember one day, I'll give him credit, he tried to sort of get our relationship a little better and suggested we go on leave together. I said, I'm going on leave with you as the last person in the bloody world.
I think that could have sealed.
I'm not sure I said exactly like that, but the message was the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine spending one more day than I had to with his presence. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And after the war, I may have told you, I was posted to Ottawa after Chilliwack.
Mm-hmm.
I went to visit Colonel Love, who was going to be my boss again. And I was in his office talking to him, and Walsh came in. He was assistant quartermaster general at the time, I guess. Anyway, getting pretty serious. I couldn't even say how do you do. I couldn't even say hello to him. I just turned out and walked out.
Really?
And I just could not. I think done so many things that I just couldn't see. To me, it was just wrong,
mm-hmm.
and I just couldn't even be polite. That's how badly I felt about it. But you know, not much use staying in the army under those conditions, eh?
No, you're not going to get anywhere.
No. That's the way I felt. I finally, I think, you know, after you know, a few years, I could meet him and be polite, but with reservation.
Mm-hmm. Well, time tends to soften wounds, not necessarily heal them, but soften them.
Yeah, well, I realized the only person I was hurting was myself, really.
Yeah.
By having these strong feelings. It's true.
Do you find that you're a stubborn person? That you
I'm a very stubborn person. And some people can get me to do things easily, but not by bully boy tactics.
Yeah.
Constantly getting, instructing you to load boys to adverse so-and-so, adverse him. You know, ruin a guy's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't do it. That was his way of getting results. Now, maybe some of these other people would get similar instructions to other company commanders and just ignore it, you know, and without getting all hot and bothered about it, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe some of them just did what they were told, too. But, I don't know. I couldn't. I couldn't.
I take it Colonel Carson shares much of your opinion, and does he share your opinion of Walsh and the same sort of...
I'm sure he feels the same way about Walsh as I do, yeah.
Yeah.
sure he had good reason to, I think.
I'll try and draw it out of him if I can. Well, it interests me because I rather envision that any information that I'm, you know, get on the tapes from either you or he, and I'm going to try and talk to Sutherland Brown if I can, if he's interested. Well, whoever writes a history, it might be of some use to him.
I don't know what Malcolm would say. I don't know how much direct... I guess he had a fair amount. I don't know what his reaction would be. No clue. But I thought, you know, I've got a bit of Bundy in the different times in our career, and I'd be very surprised if he doesn't feel the same way. Okay, let's go.
Turner is the new leader.